Hi, guys. How are we doing? Welcome to the show. I'm Liz Wheeler. This is the Liz Wheeler Show. Great topics to talk about today. We're going to be just a little bit ahead of the curve today, actually, because Joe Biden is expected momentarily, any hour now, to make a huge announcement about student loan debt cancellation. So we are going to preemptively debunk the nonsense that you're going to hear from Joe Biden's mouth. What we're going to talk about today, besides student loan debt cancellation, is we're going to talk about the fact that Democrats, in the lead up to the midterms, are desperate for a distraction. Distraction from inflation, distraction from Biden's failures, distraction from the FBI abuse of power targeting President Trump that has infuriated the country. So we're going to ask the question and then answer the question, what is the Biden administration doing to distract us from his own failures, from inflation, from the FBI abuse, et cetera? Well, what they're doing is student loan debt cancellation. And this can be a confusing issue for a lot of people, even across party lines. There are some Republicans who are in favor of it and some Democrats who are opposed to it. So what I want to do today is I want to ask the basic question, what is this? What does this mean when Biden says with the stroke of his pen that he's going to eliminate some student loan debt for some people? Who exactly does this help? Who does this hurt? What are the further-reaching ramifications of Joe Biden canceling student loan debt? And will it work, ultimately, not for the cancellation of the debt itself, but will it work to distract the American people from Biden's failure as president of the United States? That's what I want to talk about today. Also, some updates. A pretty serious update, actually. The verdict is in the Whitmer FedNapping trial, and we can't start the show without talking about that. So let's get going. Thank goodness for American Hartford Gold. If you're like me, then you are growing more and more concerned about the future. Inflation is at its highest level in 40 years, which means the highest level in my entire lifetime. Interest rates are skyrocketing. Market experts like Jamie Dimon, who's the CEO of JP Morgan, not only predicted that this recession would happen, but they're using terms like economic hurricane and unprecedented. If you want to protect your future, then I suggest you do what I did. I called the only precious metal dealers that I trust, American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and your retirement accounts by diversifying your portfolio with physical gold and silver. All it takes to get started is a short phone call, and they'll have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside your IRA or 401k if you're like me. And they make it easy. They're the highest rated firm in the country with an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. If you call them right now, they'll give you up to $1,500 of free silver on your first order. So don't wait. Call them now. Call 866-781-7499. That's 866-781-7499. Or if you prefer text messaging, you can text my name, Liz, to 65532. Again, that's 866-781-7499 or text L-I-Z to 65532. Okay. So the big picture of what's happening in our country right now is Joe Biden's presidency has been going abysmally. His approval ratings are the lowest ever. He's hurting the American people and doing so deliberately. Whether it's high gas prices, whether it's inflation, whether it's his obsession with this radical climate change ideology that underpins the policies that are hurting us. He talks about transitioning our economy to what? While transitioning us off fossil fuels onto quote-unquote green energy. We all know that that's going to hurt us. We see that happening before our very eyes. We see our energy prices skyrocketing. We see food prices skyrocketing. We see gas prices skyrocketing. This is all due to Biden. Biden's spending. He knows exactly what he's doing. His refusal to drill for oil, his refusal to use our natural resources, his reliance on foreign oil. These are things that Joe Biden doesn't want the American people to think about in the lead up to the midterm elections. Why? Well, the answer to that is obvious. Because it's not just Republicans who don't want to pay high gas prices. It's not just Republicans who see inflation and know that their paycheck comparatively has shrunk. This doesn't just hurt Republicans. It hurts everyone in our country, including Democrats, including independents, including swing voters who cast their vote based on the performance of the president and not necessarily an underpinning ideology. So Biden is desperate for a distraction. He's also desperate for a distraction because the FBI abuse of power that I think the Biden administration genuinely thought they were going to get away with when the FBI staged that raid on Mar-a-Lago, I think that the people in charge of that, meaning Christopher Wray and Merrick Garland, were so insulated in their swamp bubble that they actually thought the American people would be on their side or would look the other way. They underestimated how angry we all are to see the federal government weaponized against a former president of the United States who is a likely future candidate for president of the United States. So they're obviously wanting to distract from this. They also want us to be distracted from the Whitmer trial, this fednapping, where the FBI abused their power to entrap a group of ne'er-do-wells. I'm not defending the people who were involved in talking smack is the nice phrase for it, but saying nasty things and even talking about some violence against Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, that's not defensible, but is that a crime? Is that political terrorism? Well, not if the FBI leads you to do all of these things. So the verdict is in on the Whitmer trial. Adam Fox, who was one of the two defendants who was on trial, and Barry Croft, the other, were both found guilty on all charges. Conspiracy to kidnap Whitmer and attempting to procure a weapon of mass destruction. And listen, these guys are like sorry guys, right? These are not admirable people. These are not people that you point to and say, oh, there's a good role model. There's exemplary behavior. No, these guys are losers. These guys were doing things and saying things that they obviously shouldn't have been saying. The rest of their lives were a disaster of alcohol and marijuana and living in the basement and having to use the bathroom at the restaurant next door because they didn't have a running water in their own home. I mean, these guys were total losers. But the FBI took advantage of the fact that they were losers to try to frame them in a plot to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer so that the Biden administration could paint all of us who were dissenters of the lockdown agenda as being violent crazies who would commit acts of domestic terrorism. So Adam Fox and Barry Croft, in their original trial, the jury could not reach a conclusion. It was a hung jury. That's why they had this retrial. It's actually unbelievable that a jury would come to this conclusion after the bombshell testimony that we heard from the FBI informants during the actual trial last week. If you didn't listen to the episode where we talked about this last week, it's called Bombshell Testimony in the Whitmer Fednapping Trial. Go listen to it. What these undercover FBI informants who were working Adam Fox and Barry Croft, what they did and what they said and what they led these guys to do is textbook entrapment. So conspiracy to kidnap Whitmer, attempting to procure a weapon of mass destruction. Here are my questions. Who invented this plot? Was it Barry Croft and Adam Fox? Did they themselves plan to kidnap Whitmer? Did they have the capacity to carry out this plan after they planned it? The answer to that question is no. It was the idea of the FBI informant to kidnap Whitmer, and the FBI informant then trained these guys and tried to lead them to buy these weapons of mass destruction. Who staged the buy? Again, the FBI informant. And no, was there money exchanged? When they went to meet this other FBI undercover agent who was pretending to be a bomb salesman or something, there was no money that exchanged hands. So I don't understand how that can be a crime. These people were not posing a credible threat. They were obvious losers, and the FBI took advantage of them. It's kind of striking to me to sit here and think about the state of our nation right now. If you are an idiot, if you are a loser, if you say stupid things, then you can be entrapped by the FBI and convicted of domestic terrorism. Never before in our country have we lived that reality, where if you're a loser, then the left can successfully convict you of domestic terrorism. Yet that's the reality that we're facing right now. And this is what the Biden administration wants to distract us from. This is a serious violation of civil rights. This is an abuse of power that's taken the federal law enforcement agency that's supposed to keep us safe and turned it against us, law-abiding citizens. The FBI is at the center of all of this. The New York Times had a piece out talking about the Trump Mar-a-Lago raid So a judge's ruling has asked the Department of Justice to submit redactions to the affidavit that was attached to the warrant that allowed the FBI to stage this raid. And Trump has asked a special master to go through to conduct an audit of all of the documents that were seized at Mar-a-Lago to determine what the FBI took that they weren't allowed to take, such as his passport. The New York Times is such a mouthpiece of the FBI, it's actually embarrassing for them. I want to read just a little bit of this article. But first, I want to talk about Nutrafol. Now, I like Nutrafol because it's both natural and it works. You know I'm a crunchy person, right? Well, you know me. There's a holistic solution for men if you are suffering in the follicle department on your head. It promotes both healthier hair and whole body wellness without drugs or prescriptions. Nutrafol is clinically shown to improve hair growth, thickness, and visible scalp coverage without any compromise. And I know that's a euphemism, so what do I mean by without compromise? Well, a lot of these similar products reduce your sex drive. Nobody wants that. Nutrafol is made of 21 potent natural ingredients that actually supports sex drive. It also supports better sleep and less stress. In a clinical study, men showed progressive improvement in hair growth and thickness after 3 and 6 months. You can grow healthier, thicker hair, and you can support our show by going to Nutrafol.com and entering promo code Liz, and you will save $15 off your first month's subscription. This is their best offer anywhere. It's only available to U.S. customers for a limited time. Plus, you'll get free shipping on every order. Get $15 off at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code Liz. Nutrafol.com, promo code Liz. So this New York Times article, let me bring this up. The title of this article is Trump had more than 300 classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. The subtitle says the National Archives found more than 150 sensitive documents when it got a first batch of material from the former president in January, hoping to explain the Justice Department's urgent response. So even in the subtitle, what does it tell us? That Trump was cooperating with these requests from the National Archives. It's funny that the FBI would stage a raid on someone who was cooperating the way that Trump was. But remember, the role the New York Times played in Russiagate was as the mouthpiece of the federal government. And by the federal government, I mean the swamp creatures in the deep state, in the intelligence community, and the law enforcement apparatus in the federal government. And they are playing the same role in this as it unfolds in the FBI's abuse of power by raiding Mar-a-Lago. This is what they write. The initial batch of documents retrieved by the National Archives from former President Donald J. Trump in January included more than 150 marked as classified, a number that ignited intense concern at the Justice Department and helped trigger the criminal investigation that led FBI agents to swoop into Mar-a-Lago this month seeking to recover more, multiple people briefed on the matter said. Okay, so first of all, it's funny because they won't use the word raid. They remember how they told us this was just a visit from the FBI? But they swooped in. Well, what do you do? If you're swooping in, what are you doing? Well, you're raiding. You're not visiting. You don't swoop in for a visit. Just funny, I think. In total, the New York Times writes, the government has recovered more than 300 documents with classified markings from Mr. Trump since he left office. The first batch of documents returned in January, another set provided by Mr. Trump's aides to the Department of Justice in June, and the material seized by the FBI in the search this month. Okay, so that's two batches of documents that Trump turned over voluntarily at the request of the National Archives. And what does the DOJ do in response? They stage this raid. The previously unreported volume of sensitive material found in the former president's possession in January helps explain why the Justice Department moved so urgently to hunt down any further classified materials he might have. And here's where the total BS comes into play. The total BS. The previously unreported volume of the sensitive material. Remember that phrase? Because, like, they bury this about 10 paragraphs down. But I'm going to tell you what they say before they say it, so you can fully appreciate this. They go on to say that the level of classification of these documents is actually completely irrelevant to what the Department of Justice is trying to charge Trump with. But this is what the New York Times does. This is what they do. First, they tell us that it was nuclear weapons-related documents. Oh, my! Nukes! President Trump, can't you just picture him in his bedroom? He creeps out of bed in the middle of the night, gets out his little Lego toys, and tries to build a replica model of a nuclear weapon based on the documents that he secreted away from the White House. Yeah, that was likely. Okay, so remember that phrase. The previously unreported volume of sensitive material found in the former president's possession helps explain why the Justice Department moved so urgently. Okay, right. And the extent to which, the New York Times writes, such a large number of highly sensitive documents remained at Mar-a-Lago for months, even as the department sought the return of all material that should have been left in government custody when Mr. Trump left office, suggested to officials that the former president or his aides had been cavalier in handling it, not fully forthcoming with investigators or both. Okay, so again, what the New York Times is doing in this article is they are presenting things in a way that makes it appear that President Trump did something bad. Big, bad orange man did bad thing with bad documents. No, President Trump had a standing order that any documents he took from the White House to Mar-a-Lago were declassified. He's the ultimate arbiter of classification. He can declassify anything he wants. This is the claim President Trump, the defense President Trump has made, and it's a completely valid defense. If someone in the government wants to litigate that, they want to challenge the right of the chief executive to be the arbiter or the ultimate arbiter of classification, that's fine, go ahead. But the New York Times doesn't get to be the arbiter of whether the president's the ultimate arbiter of classification. They need to present the whole story. And since they're not, you can tell they're lying to us. They go on to say the specific nature of the sensitive material that Mr. Trump took from the White House remains unclear. But the 15 boxes Mr. Trump turned over to the archives in January, nearly a year after he left office, included documents from the CIA, the National Security Agency, and the FBI, spanning a variety of topics of national security interest. Okay, remember what they originally told us these documents were? They said it was letters that Kim Jong-un had written to President Trump, which President Trump has already talked to the American people about publicly. So by nature of that conversation, President Trump declassified the material. And we were also told that there was a letter that former President Barack Obama left at the White House for President Trump when he was the incoming president. So the nature remains unclear. First, it was Kim Jong-un and Obama letters. Then it was nuclear documents. And now we just don't know, according to the New York Times. The highly sensitive nature of some of the material in the boxes, the New York Times writes, prompted archives officials to refer the matter to the Justice Department, which within months had convened a grand jury investigation. So last week, as you remember, we talked about an article written by Margot Cleveland at The Federalist, which simply laid out the historical reality of what happens when the National Archives has a conflict with an outgoing president, which is every time there is an outgoing president, there's always a conflict about what the president wants to take with him, what he's allowed to take with him, or what's covered under the Presidential Records Act. So if it is a personal note between the president and his wife, that belongs to the president. If it is something, well, of a personal nature, it belongs to the president. But if it's some sort of official communication, then it belongs to the U.S. government, and the Presidential Records Act covers it, and the National Archives is the one who is responsible for maintaining it, collecting it, and storing it, and keeping it. Every single president has this conflict with the National Archives. That's why Barack Obama has a place, a storage unit in Chicago, where he keeps over 30 million pages of documents from his administration. He has an agreement with the National Archives that he's going to digitize everything that he wants before he returns it. So how long has Obama been out of office? Pretty long time. But the National Archives, even though they want those records back, they haven't raided him. Same with Bush. Same with Clinton. Even Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton wasn't the president, but her communications are covered under the Presidential Records Act because she's an employee of the federal, she was an employee of the federal government. Okay, let's keep reading here. The Justice Department investigation is continuing, says the New York Times, suggesting that officials are not certain whether they've recovered all the presidential records that Mr. Trump took with him from the White House. Even after the extraordinary decision by the FBI to execute a search warrant at Mar-a-Lago, investigators have sought additional surveillance footage from the club. It was the second such demand for the club's security tapes and underscored that authorities are still scrutinizing how the classified documents were handled by Mr. Trump and his staff before the search. Mr. Trump's allies insist that the president, this is how many paragraphs down, I've even skipped a couple of paragraphs. What is this, like 10, 11 paragraphs into the article, where they finally say Mr. Trump's allies insist that the president had a standing order to declassify material that left the Oval Office for the White House residence and have claimed that the General Services Administration, not Mr. Trump's staff, packed the boxes within the document, packed the boxes with the documents. That's pretty pertinent information that would change this whole story, right? Well, the New York Times has an agenda. No documentation has come to light confirming that Mr. Trump declassified the material, and the potential crimes cited by the Justice Department in seeking the search warrant for Mar-a-Lago would not hinge on the classification status of the documents. Ba-da-bum! Okay, this is my favorite paragraph of the entire article. Let's read this again. No documentation has come to light confirming that Mr. Trump declassified the material. Well, that's not how declassification works when you're the president of the United States. You don't have to file documents the way that every other person in the federal government does to go through the process of declassification. You can literally look at a document on your desk, And if you're the president of the United States, you can say that's declassified. And it is. Or you don't even have to say that. You can share that classified information with at your discretion with whomever you want. And you have decided as the ultimate arbiter of that classification that you're going to declassify it to tell it to somebody else. There are executive orders on the books from presidents of multiple parties that lay out the legality of the president's process for declassification, and there's no documentation necessary for that. But the New York Times gives away their whole game here, right? When they say the potential crimes cited by the Justice Department in seeking the search warrant for Mar-a-Lago would not hinge on the classification status of the documents. Well, which is it? Which is it? National security risk, nuclear documents, or not? They're trying to have it both ways, and let me tell you what happened here. Of course it's not a national security risk. If it actually was nuclear weapons documents, the FBI would have raided the day that President Trump took the documents. Otherwise, they're very derelict in their duty. Negligence on the job, posing a huge danger to the United States if Trump actually has those little blueprints of the nukes that, I don't know, Iran or Kim Jong-un or something. Maybe he's going to slip it into his envelope for his communication with Kim Jong-un. This is what it's like to be inside the head of someone with Trump derangement syndrome. This is the mainstream media. They're bananas. They're absolutely off their rockers here. But crimes cited by the Department of Justice don't hinge on the classification of the documents. What happened here is this raid was conducted to try to get information for Liz Cheney's January 6th committee. The January 6th committee, this show trial, this witch hunt, this fishing expedition, this character assassination of President Trump came up with nothing. They found no communication that tied him to anybody that committed violence. No public statement or private statement where he condoned the violence or encouraged it. No coordination between him and any group that did anything wrong. Nothing. They came up empty-handed. Actually, worse than empty-handed, because the people that they trotted out as their witnesses, like Cassidy Hutchinson, were an embarrassment. Their testimony was debunked within minutes of them saying it, of her saying it on national television, under oath, no less. And so originally, the FBI raids President Trump, hoping that they find something that will help them in their fishing expedition, and they find nothing. Nothing. And so then they say, okay, well, this is about classified documents. We need to return classified documents to whence they came. We'll use the National Archives as an excuse. The National Archivist, the chief archivist of the United States, was someone who didn't like Trump, a bitter partisan who had called Trump a threat to our democracy. And so they thought, okay, well, maybe we can get Trump on the classified documents. But really, they're not looking for classification. They're looking for any quote-unquote mishandling or concealment of documents that belong to the National Archives and not to Trump personally, because a president can be charged, anybody, not just a president, can be charged and convicted of this crime of mishandling or concealing a document, and you can be sent to prison for up to 3 years, you can be fined, and you can be prevented from becoming the president of the United States. This is what the New York Times is trying to run cover for, but they contradict themselves multiple times, multiple times. Remember, the key to all of this is unsealing the affidavit. When we unseal that affidavit, which is the justification for the warrant, when we see for ourselves, when we read those words with our own eyes, we're going to see that the witness interviews that are included in that affidavit, the reason the FBI or the people that the FBI are using to convince the judge to issue that warrant are going to be bitter partisans. They're Trump haters. They're going to be the same people who went after Trump during Russiagate. It's going to be mainstream media lies who was lying on behalf of the Department of Justice recycled in that terrible cycle where the Department of Justice leaks to the New York Times, the New York Times writes an article about it, and then the Department of Justice uses that as justification for something they want to do. That's what they did with the FISA court warrants with Carter Page, right? They leaked information to the media. The media wrote an article about it, and then they took that article with their lies, but anonymously, and they used that. They gave that to the judge to get that warrant issued. It's a vicious cycle of lying, and that's what we're going to see in this affidavit as soon as it's unsealed. As soon as it's unsealed, mark my words. And remember, the person that they relied on within Mar-a-Lago, it's going to be a Secret Service agent. Mark my words, it will be a Secret Service agent. Remember, Joe Biden thinks President Trump should be prosecuted for January 6th. The New York Times has reported this before, that Biden wants Trump prosecuted. This is what the Biden administration wants to distract us from. They underestimated the fury that they would face by abusing their power in the federal government. So what are they doing to distract? What are they doing? Well, they vilify Trump, right? To distract from Biden's abysmal failures as president, they want to vilify Trump. They think, well, that's how we won in 2020, by vilifying Trump. It's not that people voted for Biden, it's that people voted against Trump. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to vilify Trump, and then they're trying to distract from the FBI abuse of Trump and of us, really, by promising free stuff. And here's where we finally get to the student loan debt cancellation and Biden promising people free money, right? This is a roundabout way of buying votes if you promise people free money. So let's talk about what this actually is. What does this mean? What does it do? Who does it hurt? Who does it help? What are the far-reaching ramifications of this? And will this actually work to help Biden distract from the abuse of power inflicted by his Department of Justice and his FBI? But first, I want to talk to you about ExpressVPN. I like ExpressVPN because I don't trust the government or private companies not to snoop on me and my family when we are online on the internet. I want to protect my family's privacy. That's why I use ExpressVPN. Internet service providers know every single website that you visit. Internet service providers can then sell this information to ad companies and tech giants who use your data to target you. It's very, very creepy. Using the internet without ExpressVPN is actually kind of like going to the bathroom and not closing the door. You want to keep your business private. Enter ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is so easy to use. You just download the app on your phone or your computer. You just tap one button and you are protected. That's all there is to it. I like ExpressVPN because when I'm researching for this show or talking to you, I know my data is anonymized. It's encrypted. I'm protected. I know you'll like ExpressVPN too. Secure your online activity today by visiting expressvpn.com/Liz. That's expressvpn.com/Liz. And if you use my URL, you will get an extra 3 months free. That's right, 3 months free if you use my URL, expressvpn.com/Liz. expressvpn.com/Liz. Okay, so finally we get to student loan debt cancellation. Biden is trying to help the Democrats in the lead up to the midterm elections because what the Democrats desperately do not want is they do not want you and I going to the ballot box and voting on down ballot candidates, meaning representatives to Congress and the Senate and state legislatures, based on what we feel about Biden's job in office. They do not want the midterm elections to be a referendum on Joe Biden. So what are they doing? They're trying to change the image of Joe Biden in the face of the public. They're trying to convince us that he's on our side. He's going to give you great stuff. He's doing good things for your life. And the way they're doing this is they're trying to dangle a bunch of cash in front of our faces. The White House is considering using Biden via executive order to cancel $10,000 of student loan debt for every person who holds that debt if they earn under $125,000 per year. This is the announcement that Biden is expected to make a little bit later today. This is probably what he is going to announce. The reason he's going to announce it now is because we are in this moratorium where student loan payments, federal student loan payments, are on hold. You don't have to pay interest. Interest is not accruing on your student loan debt right now. But that moratorium is set to expire on August 31st. And so what's Biden going to do? Is he going to, 2 months before the midterm elections, make young people especially, actually it's mostly millennials, so it's mostly people in their 30s and 40s right now who unfortunately typically tend Democrat, is he going to make those people start paying money, or is he going to give them free money so that they feel that they don't have to pay the money? That's the decision that he's going to make. This is kind of a big deal because he acts like this is fairness. He acts like this is equity. He acts like this is redistribution, giving money from the rich to the poor, but actually it's the opposite. It's the opposite. And in response to the inflation that we're facing right now, it will be much more detrimental to people in my generation or people who have student loan debt to have $10,000 canceled from their outstanding payments or from their outstanding debt. It will be more detrimental to have Biden take away that $10,000 than not to, because ultimately we will be paying more. Here's what I mean. Here's exactly what I mean. So the former Obama Secretary of the Treasury, he was also the National Economic Council director under the Obama administration. His name is Larry Summers. He's actually against this plan, even though he worked for Obama. And this is why. He says student loan debt relief is spending that raises demand and increases inflation. It consumes resources that could be better used helping those who did not, for whatever reason, have the chance to attend college. It will tend to be inflationary by raising tuition. So this goes back to modern monetary theory, which you guys, we've talked about a lot. Modern monetary theory is that you print money to spend money, well, so that you can fund your radical leftist pet projects here. And that if you don't have the money, you don't have to raise taxes necessarily to get that money. You don't necessarily use taxpayer money to fund your projects. You just print the money. But if you print the money, what happens? It devalues money in general. It devalues our dollar. What happens when our dollar is devalued is inflation increases, things become more expensive, and that ultimately hurts us a lot. We're in an inflationary cycle right now because of Biden's spending and his printing of money. But if you cancel, quote-unquote cancel student loan debt, then you run the risk of that happening again because it makes money not worth anything if you're simply printing money and handing it out for free. It takes the value away from it, and that increases inflation. So in the face of inflation, Biden is doing something that he promises or he claims will help us, help people, but it won't because it'll just increase inflation, which will increase our overall cost of living, whether it's at the gas tank, whether it's at the grocery store, wherever it may be. Even the former Obama National Economic Council Director Larry Summers is against it, which is quite something. It's also fundamentally unfair to people who paid for college. And there's this misunderstanding among the left. Some people are just dumb, I think, and fall for this. Other people are willfully ignorant. And then there's the people who are deliberately misrepresenting what the cancellation of student loan debt does because they want it to happen, because they want a larger, more sprawling government that spends a lot of money. There's a young woman who does an Instagram show and a TikTok show called The Pocket Report. She's leftist, but it's actually quite a funny show or an amusing show because she's sort of a parody or satire of what a lot of political shows are. But she is, of course, a committed leftist underneath her satire. And so sometimes she does things like this video where she makes claims about who is disenfranchised, is the word she used. Who's disenfranchised by carrying student loan debt? So basically an argument for if Biden likes minorities, then he needs to cancel this student loan debt. And this is what she did. This is also, by the way, why the White House is being flooded with pens in their mailroom. She was the one who coordinated sending pens to Joe Biden in the name of student loan debt.
Hey guys, this is The Pocket Report. A few months ago, I asked you all to send spare pens to the White House with the hashtag pens for Biden, to the conclusion that the only reason Biden hasn't forgiven student loan debt yet is because he must not have a pen to sign the executive order with, so we were gonna help our guy out. And you guys did. The White House received thousands of pens, and the New York Times even wrote about it. They did not mention me, which is fine. The reason that this got a lot of attention is because, well, petitions, emails, postcards, all of those things are good things, receiving thousands of pens in the mail is really annoying, and that tends to be when you get somewhere. So not to sound like a Pelosi email, but I am asking you guys to send more pens, but I can explain. We all know the real reason that Biden should forgive student loan debt is because of the specific populations it disenfranchises: people of color, first gens, anyone without generational wealth, the impact it's about to have on the housing market, and because the government forgives debt literally all the time, and the only difference here would be making the same actions for everyday Americans the way that this country always has for corporations. But the reason right now is a time we might be able to push this through is because there's been mounting pressure on Biden to fulfill this campaign promise. Midterms are right around the corner, and the pause on student loan payments ends August 31st. However, the federal government has reportedly told loan servicers not to remind borrowers about the resuming payments in September, indicating another pause extension, probably because they don't want those bills hitting right before midterms, which is all the more reason to just knock them on out. So please grab your spare pens, address them to the White House, and include a note to Biden explaining specifically what your pen is for, and post it on your social media accounts with the hashtag pens for Biden in the next week or so. The idea is to bring enough momentum to put Biden at a breaking point, and because picturing a pile of like 7,000 used Bic pens in the White House mailroom is funny, please send pens. Thank you.
So amusing, right? Right. The not amusing. So I actually think that it's, I enjoy watching her stuff, even though she's liberal, because I think it's kind of funny. But this is the problem with this is what a lot of young people on TikTok and on Instagram think is true. They think that student loan debt disenfranchises minority people. Like she said, maybe first generation people, minorities, women. And that is not true. In fact, if you cancel student loan debt, it helps wealthier people. Listen to these statistics. You'll notice she didn't back up any of her comments or her claims with fact. And this is, of course, where the left always gets caught, where their true colors are always exposed. So a report from the Brookings Institution shows that 1/3 of student debt is owned by the wealthiest 20% of households, while only 8% of student debt is owned by the bottom 20%. Why is that? Because the majority of student loan debt is not undergraduate. The majority of student loan debt is accrued by people going to grad school. These people who go to grad school have an earning potential far above people who graduate with just bachelor's degrees or associate's degrees, and certainly just high school diplomas. So you are giving money, you are subsidizing people who have an earning potential far and away higher than those who are not carrying the debt at all. 37%, only 37% of Americans overall have a bachelor's degree or higher, a four-year college degree. Only 13% of Americans have graduate degrees. And yet, 56% of student loan debt is held by people who went to grad school. Who's going to be getting this cash? Rich kids. Rich kids are getting this cash. Medical school and law school graduates would receive the largest benefit for this. They would get $90,000 and $55,000 in debt cancellation, respectively, based on proposals Biden has presented before about student loan debt cancellation. This is quite something to me. It's quite something to me that the Biden administration would claim that this is about struggling students when really it's not. When really it's the wealthiest families whose children go to college, because it's not the majority of Americans who go to college. It's actually a fraction of Americans who go to college. The wealthiest families whose children go to college and then grad school, they're the ones who hold the debt. They're the ones who are going to benefit. It's also fundamentally unfair to people who paid for their own college, who had jobs. My sister, for example, struggled through college. And when I say struggled, I mean worked hard. She worked hard so that she didn't have any debt. She earned scholarships. She had jobs. She worked really, really hard, and she came away debt-free. And what, is she just going to be punished for it because she doesn't have debt? Someone who wasn't as responsible, didn't work as hard as she did, didn't make the sacrifices she did? That person gets free money now? This is going to disincentivize people from paying their debt in addition to being unfair. It's not free either. When Biden says he will cancel or erase student loan debt, it's either we pay for it, we the taxpayers, which is unfair because I'm not the one who made that decision to go to a $50,000 a year college. I specifically didn't make that decision because it was financially irresponsible. Either we the taxpayer pay for it, or as we discussed before, if Biden prints the money to pay for it, then that devalues our dollar, leads to inflation, and we end up paying for it anyway. This takes money from low-income people, and it subsidizes people with a higher income. It also causes colleges to raise their tuition, because if they know that the federal government will cover any amount of money that their tuition, that they're charging for tuition, then why wouldn't they increase their tuition? Of course they will. We've seen that happen. We've certainly seen that happen. It's a little odd to me that the Biden administration is making this move now. I understand in a sense why they're doing it, because if you pretend to dangle something free in front of people, it incentivizes them, unfortunately, to vote for you. Biden wants to distract from the FBI. But a lot of people on both sides of the aisle actually think that Biden canceling student loan debt will increase inflation. This isn't a completely partisan issue where Republicans are against it and Democrats are for it. There are a lot of Democrats that are against it. There was a CNBC survey that said that 59%, that's 6 out of 10 people, said that they're concerned that canceling student loan debt will make inflation worse. 81% of Republicans are concerned, and 41% of Democrats say it will make inflation worse. Overall, 34% of voters say that student loan debt should be forgiven for those in need. 32% say all student loans should be forgiven, and 30% say no student loans should be forgiven for anyone. So this is not like the cut and dry the cut and dry policy, or their cut and dry proposal that Biden thinks it is. This is how much it's going to cost us. If Biden were to just extend that moratorium on accrued interest on student loan debt, if he were to extend that past August 31st, it would cost taxpayers $20 billion more per year. Every year. $20 billion. If he cancels $10,000 in student loan debt for every person who has student debt, that's going to cost American taxpayers $230 billion. How do you feel about paying for somebody else's school when they haven't paid for it themselves? Does that seem fair to you? If you didn't go to college, or you chose not to, or you chose to go to a state school or a community college and not an incredibly expensive private school somewhere, do you feel that that's just, that you and your spouse and your children or your parents are going to have increased taxes and just pay for it by inflation because someone else made a decision differently than you? I don't think this is going to be the winning issue that Biden thinks it's going to be. The fact that the Biden administration has already put this pause on student loan debt payments has cost American taxpayers $30 billion. But the political corruption behind this is quite something. It smacks almost of a backroom deal, because the people in Congress, the leftist politicians who are in favor of canceling student loan debt the most, are the people in Congress who have student loan debt themselves. AOC has student loan debt. Jamal Bowman has student loan debt. Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, they would all have their student loan debt canceled. There are 30 White House employees in the Biden administration, 30 of Biden's White House aides who have student loan debt, who would see this erased. That's one of the reasons why only 38% of young Americans think that Biden should cancel student loan debt. Doesn't that smack of like corruption of a backroom deal of Biden signing an order just so that the people that work around him get the benefit? And yet we're told by people on TikTok and Instagram, and those are the people that are influential in what young people think. That's where young people get their news from, social media. That it disenfranchises minorities and first generation Americans if they carry student loan debt that they chose to carry. It's not true. It's a redistribution of wealth scheme that benefits the wealthy. It takes money from the poor and gives it to the rich and to Biden's friends and his employees and liberals in Congress. Now, this is not to say that student loan debt is not a problem. It is a problem. We have a terrible system of higher education in our country. That doesn't even take into account the indoctrination that happens in these schools. But we do have this problem with how expensive college is. We tell children that if you want to be a professional, you have to go to college. We tell them, oh, be financially responsible. Here's how you use a credit card. Here's how you live within your means. And we also tell them that it's okay to accrue sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt to go to college. They come out of college, they have to get an apartment, they have a first-time job at a starting salary, and they also have these incredible student loan payments that it takes them decades to pay off. This is not setting up our young people for success. This is a problem, and we should figure out how to solve this problem, because it's not the only way, it's not even kind of close to a good way for colleges to operate and for people to have to pay for college when college is this expensive. And so here are a couple of suggestions on how to solve this. First of all, not everyone should go to college. College and university is not what it used to be, where if you go to a liberal arts school, you come out with a very cerebral academic understanding of philosophy and the arts and world history and literature. That's not what it is. People go to party. People go to get an artificial sense of independence outside of their parents' house. And this is what happens. I mean, they're not coming out educated. They're not coming out even able to get a job when they get these gender studies and queer theory type degrees. I mean, it's ridiculous. If you come out with an art history degree, like what do you think you're going to do? So not everyone should go to college, and there shouldn't be any stigma on that, because it's not a place of education. In some cases, it's a place to train for a career, but only in certain professions, not all of them. So we need to get away from encouraging everyone to go to college while colleges are still like this. The other thing that we need to do is we need to end the federal subsidies for student loan debt. There was a study done by the Federal Reserve that found that each dollar of federally subsidized student loans that that colleges accept or receive increases tuition by 60 cents. So what did I say before? I said that colleges will raise tuition if they know that the federal government will always pay back the debt that students own. And this is proved by the study that said when the federal government subsidizes student loans, for every dollar that they receive of that, they increase tuition by 60 cents. We have to end federal subsidies for student loans. Colleges will not charge this amount of money if they don't think they're going to be paid back for it. And students won't go to college if they can't afford that. And so the free market will then work to bring the cost of college down to a point that, sure, the colleges might still make money, but students and families will still be able to afford it. It's actually a fairly simple solution that, shocker, relies on the free market to balance things out. The other thing that we should do is we should tax non-taxable university endowments. Universities have endowments that would blow your mind. There's so much money. We're talking tens of millions, sometimes billion-dollar endowments. And donations to this are non-taxable, and you can invest it. Universities can invest these endowments to increase the money, and that's not taxed either. When they're operating, especially when they're operating as radical leftist indoctrination centers, they certainly should, their non-taxable university endowments should be taxed. If we do these things, then we will be much closer to solving the student loan debt crisis, and we wouldn't be making it worse, which is what Biden is going to be doing if he pretends to hand people free things, but really increases inflation, all as part of the transition, you know, increases inflation and gives money from taxpayers who didn't go to college to irresponsible rich people who did go to college and don't want to pay for it. Don't fall for Biden's nonsense. Don't fall for Biden's lies. Don't fall for Biden's distraction techniques. He's so desperate for you and I not to see what he's doing with the FBI, the abuse of power, with inflation, with gas prices, with his failure of a presidency, that he's trying to hand us essentially free candy to make up for it. It's disgusting. Okay, over on Locals, I got to tell you, what we're going to talk about on Locals today, we can't talk about on the main show. It's, big tech won't let us talk about it. It's so graphic. It's so gruesome to see the pictures that I want to show you, but we really need to understand what we're facing when we're talking about what the transgender ideology does to children, not just the psychological abuse, but the physical abuse. So you can join us at lizwheelershow.com/locals. That's lizwheelershow.com/locals. My promo code is ACCESS. You can use that to watch for free for the first month of your annual subscription. lizwheelershow.com/locals. ACCESS is the promo code. Also, I'm going on tour again this fall on college campuses all across the country, and you can invite me to speak at your campus. Just go to yaf.org/liz. If you are at school right now, you're about to go back to school, you're about to take your child back to school, or you know somebody, a niece, a nephew, a grandchild, who is facing radical leftism on their campus, I would be happy to come and set that school straight. yaf.com/liz. All the directions on how to apply and how to bring me there, it's very easy, but it's all right there on that website, yaf.org/liz. Thank you for watching today. Thank you for listening. I'm Liz Wheeler. This is The Liz Wheeler Show.